This is Cool Science Radio. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Scott Greenberg. The AI boom is quietly creating a crisis most people never see. Not in the algorithms, but in the physical infrastructure that makes it all run. Data centers are being built at a pace that's outstripping the supply of trained technicians to operate them. And in that environment, a mistake isn't just costly, it can actually be catastrophic.
Our guest this morning, Doug Donovan, is the founder and CEO of a company called Interplay Learning. It has trained more than 500,000 technicians across the skilled trades using immersive simulation-based learning. Interplay just launched a new data center training program that lets technicians get hands-on education with a variety of technical systems before they ever set foot in a live environment, working through real-world scenarios that can't always be found by reading a manual. Doug Donovan, welcome to Cool Science Radio.
Thanks, Lynn. Happy to be here.
Well, we're really happy to have you. This is going to be an interesting conversation, as we said before in the green room, not just about the skilled tradespeople that we need for data centers, a whole conversation, but also the trades in general and how somehow they're making a comeback. They've always been there, of course, but the comeback is what you should tell us.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think there was a, you know, there was a college for all mentality for three plus decades in this country. And I think we've all recognized perhaps that wasn't the best system to serve everybody. And it certainly wasn't the best system when you look at our, you know, deteriorating infrastructure, the struggle to find help for these technical roles, et cetera. I think the pendulum went too far. I think, you know, the goals were admirable. I think it made sense at the time, but I think we've recognized now that's probably not a sustainable system. And so I think it's a confluence of a number of things, right? There's sort of that overstep that we did towards college. And then I think there's this rapid ascent of the recognition of this technician and technician economy that is going to get, frankly, powered by some of the rotation required from this AI-driven world, and sort of high-tech, white-collar, under-threat world. And, well, what do we do, and how do we make sure that we're there to build and iterate and maintain and operate all the things that the world that we depend on every day in our lives?
It's funny, we have recently been remodeling a house, a rental house that we own, and have had all these tradesmen coming in. And there is suddenly a level of pride that has not been there. Pride and gratitude for their jobs, because they know, and they've heard all this, that, you know, AI is taking over all these white collar jobs. Now, I realize that's probably an oversimplification, but it's a really nice thing to hear. It's really refreshing.
Yeah, I fully agree. And I think, you know, you go back to the COVID years, and what do we designate these workers as? Essential. And you start putting a, you know, moniker like essential on a group of workers. And yeah, there should be pride, because there was a long period of time where it was overlooked and underappreciated. And, you know, we talk a lot about, you know, our mission is to empower the people who build, maintain, and operate the world we live in, right? There's sort of an appreciation even in our mission statement that, you know, we have to credit this. You know, I'm sitting in an air-conditioned place, and I took a car here that ran, and my food's staying cold, and, you know, all those things that we take for granted so often. I think we kind of had to relearn our appreciation for that during the COVID years, and fortunately, I think that has persisted.
So, Doug, traditional training for skilled trades has really relied on things like apprenticeships and on-the-job training for generations now. What's broken about that model when it comes to maybe working in these data centers specifically?
Yeah. You know, I'm not sure I'd say it's broken so much as the capacity is constrained, and the pace at which it can happen is not really at the pace that the industry and business demands it. And so, you know, at Interplay, what we're often doing is trying to take those capacity constrained organizations, whether it's a trade school, community college, whether it's an apprenticeship program, whether it's K-12 that's trying to introduce people in these jobs, and how do you use technology to accelerate the adoption of these skills? And we've relied heavily, as you mentioned, Lynn, in the opening, on simulations to do that. And these are you know, point of view simulations that mimic in the field. And one of the major capacity constraints, as you can imagine, is getting in the field. That takes time. There's a lot of lab stuff. There's just a lot of complications. It takes a lot of instructors, which is another challenge we talk about later. But, you know, there are some real capacity constraints to that. And geez, when we founded this company more than a decade ago, we looked at the military, medical, aviation industries, which for decades used simulation to accelerate learning, to condense learning times, give, you know, learners more scenario-based situations where they can mimic in the field. Again, not necessarily replacing the hands-on, like you said, the in the field is, you know, big part of it and is, will continue, but can you use technology to make that time more effective and to gain skills faster?
Well, for someone who's actually never seen this type of technology in action, can you maybe walk us through what a technician actually experiences when they're training on your platform?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, the thing that I'll say at a cocktail party is we kind of build video games, right? But instead of, you know, shooting at the bad guy or, you know, solving some puzzle, you're troubleshooting a heat pump. And instead of, you know, whatever weapon of war you might have in your hand in that video game, you're carrying a multimeter and that type of thing. So that's the quick way I describe it. And if you think about that, what you can do is, let's say we're learning how to troubleshoot a heat pump. Our ability to put somebody through multiple scenarios. Okay, let's break the compressor and let's put that learner in that environment and make them go through that diagnostic procedure. Okay, now let's break the you know, a transformer outside and see if they can diagnose that problem. So our ability to mimic the in the world scenario is really a powerful tool, because these traits, while incredibly cognitive, by the way, I think people often think hands-on, oh, it's you know, it has to be done in the field. I think what we've demonstrated that these are incredibly cognitive activities with high variability. And so you can use these simulations to mimic that and really accelerate their exposure and their ability to build skills and the critical things they need to do every day in the job.
If you're just joining us on Cool Science Radio, we're speaking with Doug Donovan. He's the founder and CEO of Interplay Learning. We're talking about training and simulation-based learning. Doug, I think it was on this show, Cool Science Radio, probably about 12 years ago, where we were speaking to someone from the dental school at the University of Utah, and they were using virtual reality or augmented reality, just like you say in healthcare, to simulate root canals. And like you say, healthcare has been doing this for a while. I mean, that was a long time ago. So I'm wondering if you can draw a parallel to something we can all identify with, like a plumber or something like that, how you're learning, your training that's kind of like building blocks, like Legos, how that works that we might understand.
Yeah, so there's a dorky, you know, education term called zone of proximal development. And zone of proximal development is something we're all very familiar with every day, and we just never thought of the term, which is to really learn something effectively, you want to be comfortable but challenged, right? You're right on the edge. If I drop in and say, hey, we're going to learn Mandarin today, and I give you a big, you know, piece of literature in Mandarin, forget it, right? It's just well beyond your comfort level. But if I learn how to scaffold you into that and try to measure where you are in your understanding and you feed you the next piece of information to guide you along that learning path, that's where it's the most effective. And great teachers do this naturally, right? They're going to read where you are. Great programs do this, they do this well. But I will tell you, in the era of computer-based training, like the computers do it even better, right? They can quickly assess exactly where you are, Lynn, exactly where you are, Scott, in your understanding. And you see this in, you know, down to like elementary school, where they're using more software on some of these basic skills learning, because if it's the software's ability to identify exactly where you are and what information they could feed you next, or have data on where somebody who has, you know, hit a wall in that spot before, how they've helped somebody through that. And so if you use that as the underpinning, now you get the sense of what could an AI-driven learning path look like for a learner. And so, you know, I won't bore you with the long history, but when Interplay really took off is when we started solving for the employers. And the, you know, Sally Seating and Air, we said to Sally, hey, What do you need someone to know in their first 90 days to be valuable? And we built that content. And then what do you need, you know, after that? And we built that content and solution. So instead of sort of a classical academic approach, we really took a practical approach to what we would build. And so that's how we actually built this content and catalog and this solution. We've now, because we're in a lot of schools now, gone back and sort of filled in all the gaps too. So now if you talk about a plumber, we have everything from what is plumbing, where you'll have graphical demonstrations of how, you know, how you're moving effluent and water around your house, and never, those should never cross, by the way. And, you know, up the way, you know, all the way through some sophisticated plumbing commercial systems. And so you can, you know, we've now been able to build depth to the program that you really can learn and learn for years at a time on our platform.
So we kind of started off in the intro by mentioning data centers, and as you know, it's quite a controversy throughout the nation, but really spurred by this data center that is proposed in the North Salt Lake Valley near Tremont. And, you know, there's always this promise that it's going to offer all these jobs. Can you give us a little more insight on that? Because I think that there aren't as many jobs. And, you know, what does that look like? How do you train these people?
Yeah, that's a good question. So there's sort of, I think you got to break it down into two buckets. One is the construction and one is the operation and maintenance. And we in our seat are a little fearful that if people are not thoughtful up through even state understanding, like, you know, the state's role in supporting workforce development, that the construction side will get all the money early. And even if you're using community members and you ramp them quickly and get them ready, and then those construction trucks pull out of town, like, you know, have we stranded a bunch of folks, or did you end up using, you know, did you bring in the labor and then off it goes? And so I think there has to be some thoughtfulness here. But you're right, when you talk about the operation and maintenance of that data center, it by itself doesn't have a ton of jobs associated with it. It's a good, healthy piece of business for a community for sure, but it's not, you know, a massive a manufacturing place that might have 2,500 or 5,000 jobs. That's not what the expectation is. However, I do think this is a moment in time where we can use the construction side to ramp into really good careers. So imagine taking somebody with, you know, maybe they're stuck between gig jobs, right? They're doing some jobs that are not a career, but they're piecing things together, and you want to get them on a real rewarding career path. Well, let's get them on an electrical career path, because if you have electrical skills, you know, you can imagine the types of things you can do, whether it's, you know, roll your own truck out and start Bob's Electric, or go work for, there is an aerospace place down the road and having those electric skills. So you really got this huge opportunity. So our hope is that there's some thoughtfulness and in bringing in a ton of entry-level electricians, which is required for that data center stand-up, right? There's tons of cable trays and wire management and wire pulling and all of this. It's a massive operation. And you can train them for it in a short amount of time, and they make them really valuable for that data center construction. Importantly, though, they have to get Chapter 2 of their training. They have to then go on and be able to continue that electrical training so they can go and get journeyman status. So then they can go and we all know, just like you told the story about the tradespeople walking in your during your remodel, finding a solid electrician is a hard thing to do these days, right? So those are great careers. And I think we can use the data center buildup as a way to quickly accelerate a lot of people in there, if we have the forethought that they then have to be continually educated to then continue on to across these all these electrical, mechanical, industrial jobs.
I think in this day and age, we have become able to sort of associate data center with AI, and I'm using the air quotes around AI, artificial intelligence. How do you employ AI in your training platforms, or do you?
We certainly do. We do it in a couple places. One, in the production, right? So you can imagine as we build content, our ability to do that quicker, just like, you know, you use GPT to probably outline this interview, right? We will use that to outline a curriculum. And so there's certainly a production side on the product. Like, how do we create content faster? How do we make it more efficient and more effective? Can we cover more ground because of it? Then we use AI also in some of the more dynamic stuff we do inside of simulations and creation. How can we, you know, texture assets in a 3D environment more, or bring you know, more possibilities in a simulation? So that's on the product production side. We certainly use that. And frankly, I've been using it for more than 5 years. So well before sort of the big, you know, big announcement of GPT 3.0 or whatever it was that we all really started paying attention. But then on the for the user, we're also starting to develop that. And it's still early days. And if you're following that at all, there's been some fits and starts on how to do this. And I think we're all trying to figure it out. I think we all thought, oh, it's going to be a chatbot alongside you, sort of co-pilot. And it hasn't really worked in learning. So we're continuing to play with things like inside the simulation. How can you guide the learner using AI? How can we better, like I talked about, the zone of proximal development? How can we make sure that that learner is getting the right information at the right time? So we're still starting to experiment with that. And I think when we do figure that out, and it's not just us, it's all, you know, whether it's, you know, Khan, if you're familiar with, you know, Sal Khan and the stuff he's done, like everyone's still trying to figure out, we know there's a chance here to personalize learning on a level that's never been done before, but we're all working and iterating and tweaking that. But I certainly think it's going to make a big difference in the long run.
Well, speaking of those simulations, I'm just curious, like, is there a point where AI is actually grading your technicians? And so, for example, can they fail? And maybe if they do, how is that failure function maybe circling back as an actual teaching tool?
Well, that is a great question, Scott, because we do a lot of what we do, these simulations that we've already have been developing, delivering for a decade, are fantastic. But they have some limitations to what they can tell what you did and didn't do, right? There's often sort of a terminal feedback thing, like, did you get it right or wrong? So it's kind of binary. But as we've started fooling with putting agents inside to observe the activity, now you really start getting this nuanced thing. Hey, Scott, you know, I noticed you checked for power first, but you didn't do a lockout tagout, right? And so we can start personalizing that response in that simulated environment in ways we could have never imagined, right? We always thought our AI would help us in a couple areas, right? We talk a lot about relevant material, opportunity to practice, corrective suggestions, deep industry knowledge. Like a great mentor has all of that, and we've tried to mimic that inside the simulations. And I always thought, well, the AI will really help with deep industry knowledge. You could ask it, oh, well, why is the outdoor unit on this side of the house, et cetera, and it would have that deep. Now I really appreciate how powerful it can be for things like corrective suggestions. Oh, Scott, maybe you want to try checking the contactor first before you do that. Or, hey, Scott, it looks like you're struggling with this measurement. Maybe you want to review this course on capacitance because maybe you don't have command. And so there is this observability now and level of understanding that we're going to be able to capture using an AI agent that I think is going to make skill verification and instruction way more precise and way more accurate.
Yeah, you think about how people were trained in the trades previously to a company like Interplay Learning. It was probably iterative. There weren't really checks on competencies and things like that. You just kind of got sent out into the field and hope for the best, right? Or I don't know.
No, you're exactly right. And it's a challenge. And a lot of it is there are proxies. Oh, this person spent this much time in the field following Sally on the job, therefore he or she must have acquired those skills, but did they really? And so I think there's a layer of what we call skill verification that's possible now, that's never been possible before. And we're rolling up a whole suite of products around skill verification, because as you can imagine, that unlocks a lot of things. If you can verify your skills, let's say you're returning military and you do have some HVAC skills that you use in the military, those folks sometimes struggle getting into a system that makes you go through seat time and makes you follow certain things. What if we could verify their skills in a way that gave that employer or that apprenticeship program the confidence to say, oh yeah, this is a third year apprentice. This is not a first year apprentice. Mm-hmm. And that ability to verify skills at scale and accessible in ways that weren't possible before. And I think there's a big unlock there that you're going to see over the coming years.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I don't know how long some of these, I mean, it's funny, we keep saying electrical, plumbing, and HVAC, right? But there must just be thousands of other jobs that you're training for as well. But, you know, what kind of time frame are we looking at, you know, for an electrician to apprentice? Was that a 4 year? I don't even know.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So a typical 4 year apprenticeship program is 4 years. And I think it's, I'll get the hours wrong, but you know, you're basically working 2000 hours a year, right, in the field. And then you have X number of what are called RTI, related technical instruction, kind of classically classroom hours. And so people don't appreciate how rigorous an apprenticeship program is. These folks have full-time jobs on the job, and then they're doing X number of hours, let's say every Wednesday night for seven of the 12 months a year, you are spending 3 or 4 hours in a classroom. I think you have to have 144 hours, and it depends a little bit state by state. But that's a lot of time. It's basically, you know, you have some friend in your life who's also pursuing that MBA, and you barely get to see her because she has her full-time job and she's doing that at night. That's what these apprentices are doing. It's really incredible. And the persistence is challenging because if, you know, if you're doing one or two nights a week, you have to be in a classroom. And, you know, we got barriers in life that make that hard to do that for 4 years. Technology is now starting to make that easier. So we're powering a number of apprenticeship programs where you don't have to go to the classroom for 4 hours anymore. You actually can use the online content as your classroom hours. And so you're seeing some more flexibility. I think with the skill verification we just talked about, now you could even potentially compress that time. Doesn't need to be a 4 year. A lot of times 4 year was set because they didn't have great measurements tools. So we thought, well, we're going to cover our behinds here, make sure they spend enough time in seat, let's use 4 years. But what if you could verify skills sooner? You know, do we have to use a calendar year to actually dictate, you know, capabilities? It doesn't make a ton of sense. So hopefully technology, as we weave that in, I think you're going to see more and more creative ways of getting people to full journeyman status and not necessarily have to sit in seat for 4 years.
Yeah. And what will be the impetus or the catalyst for that evolution of shrinking the timeline? Like, how will interplay learning go before the grand board of electricians and say, yeah, you know, we can do this training in 2 years?
Yeah, that's, I mean, you know, we've got unions involved in this, and you know, we have full respect and power a number of unions programs there, but there's certainly, you know, established ways of doing things. So there is going to be, we're talking about selling new technology into old industry in some places. And so there's some resistance. And so there may be creative ways. I mean, if you think of like, think of computer science, right? We don't have to go back, what, 2 decades. And typically a programmer came out of a 4-year CS program. And then the big industry said, well, wait, we need coders quicker. We need more programmers. We don't have enough. So what evolved were boot camps, right? Something we're very familiar with now, coding boot camps, where we said, geez, we're going to ramp people in 6 weeks. Yeah, you're not getting a seasoned coder, but you're getting somebody walking in the door with the fundamentals. And now as the employer, I can start learning and earning with that, right? That learner is now working for you and they're earning and they're learning. And so you started building better training programs inside employers. So I think you're going to see some workarounds where the employers take a bigger role. Heck, we just saw that. The big news last 2 weeks ago was Meta stood up, I think what they're calling it, America's Workforce Academy. This is an employer jumping into the workforce development world saying, hey, we're actually going to put people through a 4-week entry-level electrical course so that we can give them jobs immediately afterwards in the data center world. And so to me, in this case, this is sort of capitalism where the employers and enterprises start driving change in ways that I don't think were anticipated by the classical, you know, 4-year institutions or community college programs. And, you know, I think there's room for all of them, but I think you're going to see more innovation. I think the enterprises are going to lead.
Now, I think it's going to really speed up the process overall, because you're right. Why do we have to use a traditional calendar to kind of maybe judge when somebody's ready for this? I mean, they can maybe spend 4 years and not be ready, or maybe they're
That's
ready.
That's exactly right. And, you know, That's but right, it's a right? system. It's a system we have at the K-12 level too, right? K through 12. You don't do 11th grade stuff in your 10th year very often. And now I think you're seeing that get exposed in other ed technology companies coming in and saying, wait, why are we managing to this calendar? Why not manage to skills and where they are in their development? And, you know, there's challenges around that too, but there's opportunity.
Well, Doug, you know, there's a lot of research on how people actually retain skills under pressure. What does the learning science tell us about how simulation outperforms classroom or maybe manual-based training?
Yeah, good question. So we were fortunate enough to, when we entered this again more than a decade ago, one of the first couple places I spent time were in the military studies, because they had been using simulation like we talked about at the outset for developing skills, right? You can't, you know, mimic an Iraqi, you know, checkpoint. But then when I was studying it, that was sort of the thing that was a high, a challenging environment for people to learn. They had to use simulations or flying a plane. And so you can imagine medical, military aviations, what do? They study the heck out of things. And so every year there's a conference on just those studies, right? And there's literally stacks and stacks of studies for more than three decades on the power of simulation learning and better outcomes, fewer in the field mistakes, et cetera. And so the nice part is we didn't have to do a ton just to prove the science itself. Those major industries did that. Now we've come in and done our own studies, certainly to show things like, you know, time to truck is reduced. That's a term plumbers use, or HVAC techs. When can you get in a truck on your own, or first time fix rates, you know, can we approve that? So we do the same thing on sort of the level that we work on, or mean time to repair. You know, there's a whole set of different metrics we're measuring against, and we've been able to demonstrate simulation has the ability to improve all of those. But we're also supported by the learning science and the learning study that's been done for literally decades by those major industries.
Wow. And if our listeners are interested in reading a great article, this is an article you wrote for Fast Company. It's dated online February 12th of this year. And the title is "The Next Great American Innovation is in the Trades." Really interesting, Doug.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Well, we're pretty passionate about what we do and our ability to get people into these really meaningful careers that change lives. Like it's an easy fuel to show up here every day. We get handwritten notes saying, thank you, this changed my life, where I'm on a path I never thought I could be on.
There's a lot of job satisfaction in that, right?
That's right.
Doug Donovan is the CEO and founder of Interplay Learning. Doug, thank you so much for joining us on Cool Science Radio.
Thanks for having me.